This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
There is grandeur in this view of life. That whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved.
Happy birthday, Charles Darwin. It's the anniversary of his birth in 1809 coming up this week. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and my co-host, Dan Barker's on the road. A seven-day, seven-event schedule in Idaho and California this upcoming week. So I'll actually be solo hosting 2 weeks in a row. And I'd be a lonely atheist, except I know I'm in good company, among the minimally 75 million human adults on this planet who reject religion and agree with what Indonesian Alexander An posted on Facebook a few years ago. There is no God. Alexander An got sentenced to prison for saying there is no God. He just got freed this week. So maybe you're one in 75 million and this show is for you. Or maybe you're just curious or open-minded. Welcome to Free Thought Radio. This is the February 8th, 2014 broadcast of Free Thought Radio, produced at and broadcasting from Madison, Wisconsin. Broadcasting also in Monterey, Grand Rapids, the Ithaca area, Columbia, Missouri, and College Station, Texas. Why not suggest our weekly show, which is available without cost, to your friendly neighborhood progressive radio station? We don't just want to non-preach to the non-converted. We're trying to counter that 24/7 din of religious right domination of our airwaves. If you're a regular listener, you know that Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a national state church watchdog based here in Madison, Wisconsin, which also happens to be North America's largest association of free thinkers, those of us who use reason in forming our opinions about religion. And this week we did finally and officially crack 20,000. We're at about 20,100, but every voice counts, every member counts. We should be at 200,000 or 2 million. So help reason prevail. And FFRF and the Free Thought Movement speak with a more influential voice by signing up today at FFRF.org. And you can also ask for a sample issue of Free Thought Today. That's our 24-page paper, edited 10 times a year by Bill Dunn. And you can go to FFRF.org and get a lot more news than we can fit into this weekly show. Another reason I'm not going to be too lonely today, even though my co-host is away, is that one of FFRF's attorneys, Patrick Elliott, will be coming in studio on the second half of the program, and we're going to talk about the growing threat to our secular public schools presented by taxpayer-paid school vouchers, vouchers going to religious schools, and also some of Patrick's recent state church victories. And before talking with Patrick and getting to some FFRF news updates, there is a lot that's been going on the last week to comment on. As mentioned, Alexander An, who is age 30, was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison in June 2012 in Indonesia under its blasphemy law for publicly declaring himself an atheist on Facebook. And as stated, he was freed this past week. The former civil servant had identified himself as a member of the Menang atheist Facebook group, and for that was charged with disseminating information aimed at inciting religious hostility and blasphemy, and he was also fined about $8,000 U.S. So his release is very welcome news. And in a similar vein, the two members of the feminist punk band Pussy Riot were released from Russian prison a little bit early in December. earlier than expected, apparently, to avert criticism during the Sochi Olympics in Russia. They, too, were essentially imprisoned for blasphemy. And two of the three members of Pussy Riot made some notable appearances this week in the United States. I may mangle their names. Maria Alekoina, 25, and Nadidza Tolokonikovova, 24, both young mothers, spent 21 months in Russia's penal system. Why? Let's listen to this short interview this past week from the Stephen Colbert Show.
You are members of, pardon the expression, Pussy Riot, okay? You were arrested in Russia and thrown in jail. What did you do that got you arrested?
We sang a fun song in a church.
So these young women were protesting theopolitics in Russia, the Russian Orthodox Church's ties to Putin. They'd performed a protest song for about a minute at the altar of Moscow's main cathedral, and the Russian Orthodox patriarchs and Putin were on a witch hunt out to get them. They were accused of hooliganism and inciting religious hatred. Their causes include women's rights in Russia, gay rights. In my opinion, they are freethought heroines, as is Alexander Ahn, a hero of freedom of conscience. They also said anyone can join Pussy Riot. And speaking of freedom of conscience, don't forget to order your Girl Scout cookies here in this country. You may recall that Girl Scouts of America, although it has a religious oath, for about two decades has officially welcomed non-believing girls. They can believe whatever they like and still be members. They're way ahead of Boy Scouts of America. And now the anti-abortionists are going after Girl Scout cookies. A national campaign by anti-groups called Cookie Cut 2014 has been called, with anti-reproductive rights groups complaining that Girl Scouts USA promote such women, gasp, as Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, as role models, that Girl Scouts partners with Planned Parenthood for educational activities and basically encourages girls to stand up for their rights. Additionally, the antis are complaining that Girl Scouts have praised Texas legislator Wendy Davis and U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. So let's hear it for Girl Scouts. The cookie sale kicks off today. Do your part and order some Thin Mints. And one more international news development that I reveled in this week. A United Nations panel finally standing up to the Roman Catholic Church. The UN Committee on the Rights of Children issued a scathing report Wednesday that's going to tell us whether the popular new pope, Francis, is just a phony frontispiece or is actually going to effect any meaningful reform of the Roman Catholic Church, and how much do you want to bet. The UN committee called on Pope Francis to make concrete changes in the way the church handles child sex abuse cases. It sharply criticized the church's current practices. It doesn't buy that these evil practices are in the distant past. The report accuses the church of not acknowledging the extent of the crimes or of taking necessary measures to address these cases and protect children from future abuse, of adopting policies and practices leading to the continuation of abuse by perpetrators and giving them impunity. And not only that, it took the Vatican to task for opposing contraception, gay rights, and abortion. In that case, they could have gone a bit further. They were championing the rights of children who've been raped or victims of incest or where their lives and health are at risk, pregnant girls. Regarding the priest sex abuse scandals and cover-up, the UN committee made very specific recommendations to stop the obstruction, to extend statutes of limitation, stop confidentiality agreements, forcing victims to keep silent to receive compensation, and helping birth parents locate children taken from them out of Catholic institutions such as the Magdalene Laundries in Ireland. Also, to financially support children fathered by Catholic priests without having to sign confidentiality agreements. What a list of scandals. And finally, getting to FFRF news, on Monday, a federal judge that's handling our hottest lawsuit against preferential treatment of churches by the Internal Revenue Service took an important action that does affect the case. This federal judge is allowing an obscure Milwaukee area church to intervene in FFRF's federal lawsuit against the IRS's failure to enforce its policies against politicking by 501c3 organizations, specifically churches and church politicking. And this development does make our case even more significant. It does place it on the front line, as our attorney, Richard L. Bolton, has said. He's litigating the case for us. And this will put everything into play, including the church's argument that the politicking restriction that applies to all nonprofit tax-exempt groups violates the First Amendment rights of churches. So basically, churches are making the Citizens United argument. And we'll be talking more about this development in future shows. But you can read the court order. You can read FFRF's detailed news release at our website, ffrf.org/news. Look for news releases in the drop-down and you'll find our press release. And I think there's time for a quick report on a recent FFRF victory out of Georgia dealing with a Harlem, Georgia police chief using city Facebook to promote God and Jesus.
Harlem Police Chief Gary Jones has been using Facebook to inform citizens about drug busts, road closures, and scams. But Jones has also been using the Facebook page to talk about his Christianity, and for some people, government and religion shouldn't mix.
Police Chief Gary Jones knows that social media is becoming more important, especially for law enforcement.
Yeah, and it's just a quick way to get information out.
But it's a post from November 2013 that some people don't like. The status update talks about God and encourages parents to teach their children about Jesus. The Wisconsin-based Freedom From Religion Foundation fights to keep religion separated from government. So when the organization found out about the religious posts, they contacted Jones.
And I received a letter of decease from the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation called the post unconstitutional and inappropriate.
What we did is just went ahead and transferred everything over to my personal page.
Chief Jones says he will continue to post his religious beliefs on Facebook, but he will do so on his personal Facebook page, not on the department's page.
So, congratulations to FFRF staff attorney Andrew Seidel for ending that violation. We'll be talking about some more violations we've been ending with Patrick Elliott coming up, and also a tribute to Charles Darwin, and a tribute to poet and lyricist Philip Appleman, whose 88th birthday is today. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and you're listening to Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
There is grandeur in this view of life. That whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. That, of course, is the words of Charles Darwin being recited by Paul Bettany, the actor from that so-so movie, Creation, about Darwin. And it is Darwin's birthday, celebration of his birthday coming up on February 12th. And in a minute, we're going to play a song kind of in celebration of him. Charles Darwin was born February 12th, 1809, and as you know, in this country, half of all adults reject his findings from the 1860s on evolution and natural selection and life evolving over time. And this is a great discredit to our country, and it puts us at a disadvantage internationally, academically and scientifically. It retards our progress in this country, that people prefer to just believe what they believe instead of accepting fact. And so we salute Charles Darwin. Dan will be speaking tonight for a Darwin Week celebration in Idaho called Darwin on the Palouse. And Dan's talk is called How Darwin Helps Us Be Moral. And also I want to say happy birthday to two very special people, poet Philip Appleman. He's the Freethought Poet Laureate, a humanist, a lifer several times over of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we run his poems. Sometimes we're honored to have new poems of his that have not been published before running in a column in Freethought Today called Heads Up. And today, Philip Appleman turns 88. And he's the youngest 88-year-old I know, still so prolific, has a new book coming out. He's had, I think, a book a year coming out in the last few years. And I would like to read a poem that will be published later in Free Thought Today. It has never been published before, so far as I know, this has never been recited before, and it's called Imagine. Imagine there's a God of so much power, he tells the sun to rise and then to set. So every promise from his ivory tower sounds as though he's issuing a threat. Imagine there's a God who makes a fuss at every jot and tittle, every word, whose score on every test is A++, who is, in short, a super cosmic nerd. Imagine there's a God of endless love, whose holy motive is the wish to bless, who counts each sparrow's death from up above and promises to help you in distress. We kneel and pray and try our best to heed him, but where's he hiding every time we need him? So that's Philip Appleman's poem, Imagine. And I also want to say hello, birthday wishes, and say hello to Phyllis Rose, who's an FFRF volunteer, longtime director. She has a birthday today, but I'm not going to tell you what age. I'm going to be chivalrous that she's turning. So happy birthday to Phil and Phyllis. And now Dan has set to music Philip Appleman's poem called God's Grandeur. And here it is from the CD Friendly Neighborhood Atheist.
God will laugh at the trial of the innocent. When they hunger and thirst, and I send down a famine. When they pray for the sun, and I drown them with rain. And they beg me for reasons, my only reply is, I never apologize, never explain. When the angel of death is a black wind around them, and children are dying in terrible pain, then they burn little candles in churches, but still I never apologize, never explain. When the Christians kill Jews, and the Jews kill the Muslims, and Muslims kill writers they think are profane, they clamor for peace or for reasons at least, but I never apologize, never explain. When they wail about murder and torture and rape, when Abel complains about Cain, when they ask me just why I had planned it like this, I never apologize, never explain. Of course, if they're smart, they can figure it out. The reason is perfectly, perfectly plain. It's because I just happen to like it this way. So I never apologize, never explain.
That was Dan Barker singing Philip Appleman's poem, God's Grandeur. It's available on FFRF's Friendly Neighborhood Atheist two-part CD that you can get at ffrf.org/shop. And I wanted to say that Philip Appleman has quite a connection to Darwin because he's a Darwin scholar. He was the editor, is the editor of the Norton Critical Edition Darwin, which is available for sale from FFRF.org, along with several of Philip Appleman's books, many poems, and many of them have to deal with Darwin. A lot of them are humorous, but many of them very serious. Now, I hate to end on a downer, but we probably should say something about the fact that on Thursday, once again, the National Prayer Breakfast was held at the Washington Hilton. It's the first Thursday in every February, and every president since Eisenhower has attended at least one of these National Prayer Breakfast events, and all of Congress turn out. It's a great big pious patriotism rah-rah, and President Obama and Michelle Obama were there on Thursday, and according to Time magazine, there was a lot of praying going on, and it's a pity that this takes place. It has the appearance of government sponsorship, but it's actually by that very secretive, shadowy group that brought us probably many violations in the 1950s. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. You're listening to Free Thought Radio, and on the next half of Free Thought Radio, I'm going to be talking with Patrick Elliott, who's an FFRF staff attorney. We're going to be talking about the menace of public funding of religious vouchers.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Annie Laurie, and my co-host, Dan Barker, is on the road speaking tonight at a Darwin Day event in Idaho. And I've got in studio with me one of FFRF's staff attorneys, Patrick Elliott. And one of the things that we're going to talk about with Patrick is the many problems of public funding of vouchers for religious and private schools. And welcome back to the show, Patrick.
Thanks for having me back.
So, Patrick, you're a graduate of the University of Wisconsin Law School. And when did you join our staff?
2010. So it's 4 years now. So, yeah, I joined in February 2010.
And I remember when we met you, you had kind of a story to tell about your free thought awakening.
Yeah, well, it relates directly to FFRF because in college I actually saw Dan do one of his debates, which was about the resurrection of Jesus, which he's now done, you know, many of these. And at the time, I was Catholic and was pretty convinced that he was on the wrong side in terms of the losing side of the debate. But it actually prompted me to take classes at the University of Wisconsin on early Christian literature. And that kind of prompted my turn in direction in terms of my, atheism now, you know, from Catholic to atheism. But Dan had a kind of a special place in that. Now we share, our offices share a wall, and so it's just kind of funny thinking back, that long ago and how I was convinced he was very wrong, and, you know, now he's won the debate, but I don't know that I've ever formally told him that that's what I think.
Well, I think that's quite a nice compliment. So you are actually featured in Free Thought Today this month, our newspaper, and it's a section called Meet a Staffer, in this case, Bill Dunn gives you questions, meet a legal staffer. So people who are listening can meet your puppy. I guess it's grown up now. There's a picture of you with your dog.
Yeah, Macy. She's a Labrador Retriever. And so I thought, you know, normally people see photos of staffers in kind of dressed formally. So I thought, why not bring Macy into a photo for the paper?
And it's a very cute stage in Macy's development. She's just that perfect puppy size for lab. And of course, now how old is she?
Oh. She's almost two now, but this was when she probably was about 12 weeks.
And how much does she weigh?
Oh, she's around 55 pounds.
Wow. So okay. And then they can also see an op-ed piece that you wrote for us on the dangers of public school vouchers. So, if you are not a member who doesn't already get Free Thought Today, you can ask for a sample copy. Go to FFRF.org and you can read more about Patrick as well. Now, Patrick, you had a good victory, a good solid victory in North Carolina, and we have some, want to play some clips from some news coverage of that, but do you want to set that up?
Sure. We received a complaint from a parent of a student in Mooresville, North Carolina, which is near Charlotte, about various religious activities, praying by the the school football coach. And I think the clips will kind of explain what's happened with that.
Okay, so we have WBTV3 out of North Carolina.
Hal Capps is the popular coach of the Blue Devils in Mooresville, but a group that advocates the separation of church and state got involved after it said that a parent complained about those prayers. Now school leaders have told him to stop. Lots of folks talking about this story.
They really are, Jamie. And to be fair, every person I spoke to in downtown Mooresville supports Coach Capps. And the question they have is, why would an organization based in Wisconsin decide to get involved in something like this in Mooresville? Well, I did talk to the staff attorney for this organization. This is the letter that he actually sent to the attorney representing the school system. He told me that anytime and anywhere someone uses their school position to advance their religious views, they would fight it.
In this YouTube video, Mooresville football coach Hal Capps is heard saying, "Let's thank the big guy," before leading his players in prayer.
Let's thank the big guys.
While Capps certainly seems to have a majority of support in the community, the prayers led by Capps will stop, according to school leaders. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is in Wisconsin and claims about 450 members in North Carolina. The group's webpage warns that believing in the Bible can endanger your health and life. Staff attorney Patrick Elliott told me the group took up this fight because, quote, school employees, including coaches, may not abuse their school position to advance their religious views. Students of all religious beliefs and no belief should feel welcome in school athletic programs. The school district's decision not only respects the Constitution, but also the diverse student body that it serves. The group also gave us this picture. It says shows Capps and another coach holding a team baptism. School leaders say it was not a team baptism, but that several players were baptized and wanted Capps present.
Christians have arrived.
The controversy has upset many around Mooresville, where football and faith are revered.
The man is right whenever he says he wants to pray with his player.
Yes, it does offend me that some people can just dictate what you do just because of their beliefs.
We were able to confirm that information, and we do know that Coach Capps said in a published report in the Charlotte Observer that he is, quote, moving forward.
Both the school system and the Freedom From Religion Foundation told us today that they consider this issue to be resolved, with the coach agreeing not to lead his team in prayer.
So that was WBTV3 out of North Carolina. A reporter was reading from Patrick's letter. I've got Patrick Elliott in the studio with me right now. And Patrick, you want to talk a little bit more about this baptism in the pool?
Well, you know, there were a number of things going on, a number of complaints. Obviously, when you have a coach injecting religion into the program, that can come into different ways. But the information that we had was that it was, in fact, a team event, in terms of that's how it was promoted through social media on the school's official, football social media accounts, including albums of the photos calling it the Mooresville football baptism. So it's I know after the fact they may now be claiming that this was something that, you know, students had done and invited the coach, but it really seemed to be ingrained into the program, and I'm glad we included that in terms of the issues that we sought to address.
Now, we do have some, I think, incriminating things being said by one of the students who was interviewed by Fox Nation. This is a student who supports the coach. Let's listen to this.
Dallas, first off, let's frame out what you guys do before games. What do you do?
Well, we'd meet together, and we'd talk, and we'd pray before games, and we'd say the Lord's Prayer. He'd pray over each and every one of us, our safety, and he prayed that we'd have a good game, and we played to the best of our abilities, and no matter what happened, that God gets all the glory.
Did anybody in your team object to that?
Not that I know of. I mean, coach always gives you the option. If you don't want to pray, you can step out, like, you can just step aside. I mean, it's not a regulation that you have to pray before games, but I didn't see no one object.
Well, here's a tweet from another one of those players. These clowns think they're going to stop teams from praying. Really? God is much stronger than this pathetic group. But the school superintendent met with your coach, and he says, stop with the religious activities. Do you think the coach should stop?
I believe that the coach shouldn't have to stop, but in the school's best interest, it'd probably be better for him to stop. But that's where the students and the players step up and take the leadership role instead of our coach, since he can't.
So if you do it on your own without the coach leading, who's going to, are they going to sue the players?
They can't. That's our right.
Okay.
So that was a student talking about the coach. And Patrick, do you want to chime in on, you know, we wouldn't be objecting if this was a student club where they were praying?
Yeah, I mean, I think the student seems to get the idea. I don't know why the coach didn't get the idea about what's permissible and not for the school employee to be doing. And here, you know, you heard him say the coach is praying over the teammates. And in terms of the legal issue, you know, coercion isn't mean, you know, with threat of violence. It means, you know, people obviously in that locker room are going to do as their coach says and participate in that religious activity.
If they want to get ahead, if they want to play.
Yeah, or just to feel a part of the team. And so in the Fourth Circuit, which North Carolina is in, that's really the standard that would be applied. This is a coercive atmosphere.
Now, is this Fox Nation, was that local coverage or was that national?
No, that was on Fox and Friends, the morning show.
So it's been a big story. And yeah. So, well, congratulations. It's a big victory. Now, we've been talking about a public school violation that Patrick has remedied. Now let's turn and talk about this really huge national problem of the push for public funding of vouchers so that kids can go to mostly religious private schools. And Patrick, you've been doing a lot about that, watching what's been going on in Wisconsin. Do you want to kind of update us on the status?
Yeah, well, you know, this is going on all over the country, but Milwaukee has the longest standing voucher program. Currently, there are about 25,000 students participating at the tune of about $160 million per year in this program. And so it's one we can look at to see, well, what are other states? How is this going to be operating in other states? What's been, I guess, covered in the news recently was the abrupt closure of one of these schools, one of these voucher schools. It was a religious school called Life Skills Academy that was, you know, had a pastor as one of the school administrators and his wife. But really, it shut down, you know, in early December, December 12th, I believe, and the students were left scrambling trying to find, you know, a new school to attend.
It was about 60 students, I think.
At this point, there were about, yeah, I think 66 students. In prior years, they had, the year before, they had 100 students or so. So with these vouchers, you do see this influx of students, and they come and they leave. And this particular school, had some difficulties with the Department of Public Instruction in Wisconsin prior to this. And I think that's what ultimately seemed to cause the shutdown in terms of DPI asking questions about who was running the school, because the operators had moved to Florida and
in the middle of the night, correct?
Well, they had operated a new school in Florida since I think the beginning of the school year, but the school was shut down. The person leasing the building said, yeah, that it was closed
in Milwaukee
in the dead of the night is what they were renting from a Catholic church building there, and that's what the priest said about how they had left. You know, it was just this abrupt closure of the school. And so I think that was particularly troubling to, you know, people supporting these school programs. But even state legislators had become involved. I would say this is unprecedented, you know, proposing a resolution to warn Florida, the proper agencies, education agencies in Florida, about this school. And so that had been proposed by 11 state representatives in Wisconsin.
So far hasn't gone anywhere.
I don't think it's been passed. It is just a resolution, but, you know, I've never seen that before. And so this was really, I think, a wake-up call to a lot of people about how this voucher system is operating here.
Now, before we talk about the problems with that school in Florida, we are going to talk with you, Patrick, about what your open records request, the shocking things that your open record request exposed about what's it called?
Life Skills Academy.
Life Skills Academy in Milwaukee. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I'm talking with FFRF staff attorney Patrick Elliott. And don't miss the conclusion.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. I'm a co-founder and co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I'm flying solo this week. My co-host Dan Barker is on the road. And in studio, I have Patrick Elliott, who is one of FFRF's staff attorneys. And we've been talking about one of his big state search victories in North Carolina. And now we're talking about some shocking allegations and facts that Patrick's open records request has uncovered regarding a voucher school that received over $2 million in public funding, has closed its doors in Milwaukee, called, what is it called?
It's Life Skills Academy.
So you, why did you do an open records request?
Well, we wanted to see, you know, we knew of this abrupt shutdown in December, but very few details from the Department of Public Instruction, that the actual public agency, had come out as to how this came about or what really happened. And so we submitted a records request to DPI about...
Department of Public Instruction.
Yeah, so there had to be some interaction with the voucher school with DPI. Very minimal. I mean, there's very little provisions in the statute for any oversight or anything like that. I mean, they may basically, you know, check on attendance counts at a certain time twice a year and make payments and that kind of thing. It's not a whole lot of state authority over these schools. They certainly don't have school boards operating them like, you know, every other school in pretty much every state, you know, publicly funded schools. We requested records from DPI, and one of the things that came out about that was records from 2012 when they were actually removed from the National School Lunch Program, which is, many people probably know, but it's for, you know, low-income students get food meals paid for by the Department of Agriculture, and each state runs that differently. In Wisconsin, DPI runs that, but low-income meals are served to students. There are, you know, more requirements with that than there are on these voucher schools. You know, the meals have to fit certain requirements and certain accounting measures have to be taken. What happened, at least in the records that we saw, there were allegations made in 2011 from a former school employee about those meals, and some of those are pretty shocking, so I can read some of what the email had talked about that included falsifications of applications, so basically falsifying if students had qualified.
So they might get more money than they...
Yeah, serving food from pantries that was expired.
And they're not supposed to serve pantry food. They're supposed to serve Department of Agriculture food.
Yeah, there's very specific requirements on what kind of food, which wouldn't include, which is what the allegation said, ramen noodles with hot sauce and a cup of water.
As a
meal.
Full lunch.
And whole milk being diluted with water to, you know, make it skim
Go
milk.
Further.
Apparently there were repeated issues with bats. That's what this person claimed. I don't know. You know, we don't know if DPI was able to substantiate some of these claims, but this is what prompted their letter to Life Skills Academy and started the investigation about how they were operating, you know, this lunch program.
So what did DPI do?
You know, over several months, they had been asking questions about meals, including, you know, just providing the menus that were served. And when DPI was actually visiting the school, which is, February of 2012, finally, they had been doing visits, found that when they asked for records from the school, that the school just made up lunch menus or falsified lunch menus. You know, they were actually there and observed what meals were served. But when they got the records from the school, those, you know, the records were doctored or changed in terms of what meals were actually served. So DPI, you know, basically wrote to them and said, we're not reimbursing you for any of the meals you've served from September, you know, of 2011 onward, up until, you know, March of 2012. At that point, the Monroes are the Rodney and Taryn Monroe are the operators of Life Skills, wrote back and saying that they were going to withdraw from the
program.
So they serve basically 100% students who are compliant for these meals by the income standard.
These are poor children who need nutrition.
And they had pulled out of the program in 2012.
So, and this has never been covered. And in fact, we put out a press release and we've documented it. And so far, it hasn't been very much coverage. You're kind of getting a scoop right now. We hope there will be more coverage of this. And it's very important because these same operators are down there in the Orlando area.
They're in Daytona Beach.
Daytona Beach.
They've operated. So this is, I guess, the other piece of this puzzle. Why are we talking about a school that had failed? They're operating Life Skills Academy 2 in Daytona Beach, which is a new school startup. I think it only has you know, less than 10 students at this point, but that's kind of typical for how voucher programs
And some of
work.
The students are their own children.
I believe so, yes. I think they have at least one child that participates.
And how much money are they getting from Florida?
Well, they have, Florida has a different program. They don't call them vouchers. They have a scholarship program. McKay scholarships are for students with disabilities, and they have a tax credit scholarship, which is basically the end around the voucher system that they've come up with. But what they've got, they have, I think, there may be three students that are receiving scholarship payments from the state of Florida. And so
they're getting public funding. In other words, they're continuing to get public funding for their school. And we haven't even talked, and I think we have time to talk about how is the academic output of Milwaukee's Life Skills Academy.
Well, that, you know, I think that's a piece that had been covered in the media, actually, finally, fairly. They're now mandated. Prior to just a few years ago, these schools weren't required to take state tests. They are now mandated to do so, and they had, you know, very poor performance. They had, I think, one fourth grade student in the entire school tested proficient in reading and math, and all of the other students, you know, were minimal or basic as terms of how the state categorizes their skills. And so this school is really performing poorly across the board, and it's not the only one in Milwaukee. There are a number of other schools that are like that, that are
kind of like storefront schools that start up and they don't have any necessarily background in education. They can just get this money at public expense, and then that money is taken, siphoned away from public schools.
Yeah, and I think it does tie into the religious issue. You know, this was a minister starting it up, and so I think that maybe in some sense gets the trust of families saying, I want my son or daughter to receive this type of education. When in reality, they up until a few years ago, didn't have bachelor's degrees. I mean, they, or at least I think one of them maybe now has a bachelor's degree, but these are people running an entire school system that don't have any education background or an education themselves.
And this isn't required by, well, some of it, they I guess there is a criterion about the bachelor's degree
now
that they had to meet
now there
after
is.
The fact.
But in 2008, when they started the school, that was not a mandated requirement.
Because there is much less accountability, hardly any requirements of these voucher schools, mostly almost all religious and Catholic schools that are getting all of this money. How much money are they getting now in Wisconsin?
It's $161 million per year just in Milwaukee. There's also vouchers in Racine, Wisconsin, and then 500 students statewide taking voucher payments.
And they're increasing the funding every year for these vouchers.
So there'll be 1,000 students next year in the statewide program.
And we didn't even get to the push for disabilities to open up voucher schools for students with disabilities. There's legislation pending in Wisconsin. But if you want to read Patrick Elliott's op-ed piece on that, just ask for a sample copy of Free Thought Today at fff.org. And I want to thank Dave McCann, who's our engineer and producer. And you can find us on iTunes. You can listen to the show, past shows as well, at fff.org/news/radio. And as I've indicated, you can join us. You can ask for more information at fff.org. You can phone 1-800-335-4021. You can support our important legal department, our 12 lawsuits, including our 3 IRS lawsuits, and this radio show. So tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday